Hi, this is Anne Filippi, founder of The New Health Club. If you want to know about psychedelics as new mental health tools, you came to the right place. I talk to innovators, thought leaders and disruptors, creating the future of mental health and mental wellness. And we think that the future is already here. Hi, and welcome to a new episode of The New Health Club Show. Most of the time, we are talking to you about mental health and psychedelics at the New Health Club, and that's our thing for sure. But today, there's another topic we would like to introduce to you: the potential of psychedelics for new ideas on leadership and supporting your creativity as an entrepreneur or executive. So let me introduce you to my guest today. It's Jonathan DePotter, the founder of Behold Retreats, a special legal vetted and safe retreats for leaders, executives, and entrepreneurs. And by the way, a portion of Behold's revenues is going to the Fireside Project, the free psychedelic harm reduction hotline. Jonathan talks to me about the psychedelic CEO and how it could look like, how integration of the psychedelic experience is one of the most important topics after the actual psychedelic experience, how new ideas for a company can come out of an experience altogether, but also how much the often stressed and high-pressured personal life of a CEO is connected to all of this, and that there is no end of evolution for your consciousness, even if you try so hard to achieve it. So if you are an entrepreneur, a CEO, or in a leadership position, and you do know that the top-down, fear-based hierarchy in companies is in the process of being replaced by a more servant leadership, and if you know that we need new ideas, new structures, and new insights for our world, not only in business, then this episode is for you. If you're not that person, please listen to the episode anyway, because it contains, I think, very interesting information about a very different way of looking into psychedelics. But now, please enjoy the show and Jonathan. So, we have Jonathan DePotter on the show today, on the New Health Club Show, and we already had a couple of conversations about your amazing Behold retreat. And before we get into a specific question, please tell us a little bit about the retreat and just to give a little intro what you guys are doing all over the world.
Yeah, it's lovely to be with you here again today, Anne. In essence, with Behold Retreats, what we've built is the thing that I wish was there for myself 5 years ago when I started down the path of plant medicine and taking and bringing a more holistic approach to the work. So what we try to do is really high quality preparation and integration around a plant medicine retreat experience. So it tends to be a 7 week or an 8 week experience for our clients, 3 weeks beforehand with doing tools for metacognition, tools for emotional processing and emotional release to really help them set deep and meaningful intentions ahead of the retreat. And then, of course, a 1 week plant medicine retreat, generally with ayahuasca or psilocybin. We also do some work with 5-MeO DMT for those who are ready. And then 3 weeks of high quality integration to help them let go of those things that are no longer serving them and to begin to manifest into their life the things that they would like to begin experiencing.
So, and actually, could you say what you have retreats now pretty much all over the world, right? You have like 5 countries where it's also legal to do these things, one should say.
Yeah, that's right. So at the moment, we're running retreats in Mexico, Costa Rica. We will be running them again shortly in Peru. And then we've also got them now in the Netherlands. And soon we're going to have them also in Portugal and Spain.
Wow. That's like the whole, like, I mean, yeah, it's kind of growing also the countries where you can do these things, I guess. So what I found interesting is that you said you were like an angry atheist when you started before your first plant medicine experience. So, and then now you turned into this friendly spiritualist, I guess. So, but the reason why I find your story so interesting under retreat is that you yourself come from, let's say, rather a business world or the finance world, right? And you said earlier that 5 years ago, you were wishing that something like that would have existed. So, and today we want to focus a little bit on, let's say, I mean, one could call it psychedelic leadership, or one could say, why is it that people who lead other people especially need to have, even before, but especially now, need to have a new way of approaching their work and their leadership. So, and you said earlier when we started to talk about the retreat that it's often that people from, let's say, a C-level are kind of overachievers because they inside they don't feel so good. Maybe we start with that kind of elaboration from your experience.
Yeah, sure. So I guess before I moved into plant medicine and the long period preparation into the transition into this new and re-emerging and exciting industry, I spent most of my career in consulting, which is a very kind of, I guess, hierarchical and top-down type of organization structure. I think it's, you know, the culture in those organizations is beginning to shift, but, you know, the reality is still it's very much top-down and hierarchical. And I guess what you see and feel in those organizations is that, you know, the people who make it to the top are very driven. They're very eager for that success, right? Getting that next client, getting that next deal, getting that next promotion. And fundamentally, there's no end to that process. So I myself, you know, I found myself about 5 years ago now in Hong Kong, and I was at director level within Accenture Strategy, leading a big team. I think I had a team about 100, 120 at the time. And I was just on that treadmill of, okay, what's the next deal? What's the next client? What's the next promotion? And I found that at that point that treadmill was no longer bringing me the joy that perhaps it once did. And so I figured at the time that there just had to be more to life. And so that's what kind of really begun me on my path and my search. And now what I can see so clearly by virtue of, you know, the change in the nature of the relationships between myself and the many people that I used to work with in that context. You know, I had amazing, incredible, brilliant, driven mentors that were just, you know, beautiful to learn from in that context. So I count myself as very fortunate, but over the years, our relationship has quite shifted because I've shifted. And so we've begun to have much more conversations about, you know, the emotional and the spiritual, and as, you know, they've become, you know, increasingly comfortable about opening up and having these conversations because of our, you know, longstanding relationship, you begin to see a pattern. There's a very, you know, there's an inner feeling of lack, of not being good enough, typically rooted in childhood trauma, right? So maybe it was mom, maybe it was dad, maybe it was someone else in the family. There's been some, you know, early life developmental challenge that has led the person to fundamentally feel like they're not good enough. And so then what takes place is that they're just that extra 5 or 6 or 10% more competitive than the next person. This generally, I think, takes hold from quite a young age, and it perpetuates through the schooling system. Then it also gets, you know, brought into the career dynamics. And, you know, fundamentally, this person is chasing validation, success, rewards, all of those sorts of things in the outside world, because fundamentally they're feeling this sense of inner lack. And so, yeah, just to see that pattern just begin to reemerge over and over and over again in, you know, the people that I hold near in my life, and also the people that we serve, in terms of, you know, executives and entrepreneurs is really interesting. And so, you know, there's a lot of inner work to be done for those groups.
Okay. So, and just let's say you're a CEO or like on the C level of a big company, or you have your own company and you kind of feel you need to undergo a certain change. I mean, for many reasons, like not only COVID or like the things that are changing, although a lot of people seem to look for or need to look for new ideas for the next couple of years, but still, I'm sure that's not the only reason. It even has existed before COVID. So how would that look like? So you kind of approach you and say, okay, this is what I would like to work on. Or like maybe you can give an example how people, like especially maybe from a very responsible background, because this is also a special kind of question, because they might even have to, I don't know, maybe not if it's their own company, they don't have to justify it, but if they work for a bigger other company, probably would have to say, well, you know, I'm going on a psychedelic retreat. So that's kind of a new thing that somebody would actually request from their kind of investors, leaders, and so on. So maybe you just talk a little bit how this works if somebody from a C-level approaches you.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, actually. And we do encourage our clients to request, you know, if they're within a larger organization, we actually encourage them to request funding in relation to leadership development, because it's something that can mm-hmm. be compensated. We generally recommend to our clients that they don't seek full compensation. I think it's important that we individually, energetically make a personal investment in our own growth and development. So rather than just someone else paying for our development, you know, I had actually envisaged when I started Behold Retreats that we might operate under a pay it forward type of business model. And so that's how I started, is actually hosting retreats, facilitating retreats for close friends and doing so at my expense. But when one of my mentors, she told me, you know, you should start charging, because you'll find that your friends will get way more benefit out of the work itself by virtue of their investment in the process. And so when I did that, you know, she's so wise, and she was so right. And, you know, because it's their energetic investment that's being represented in the investment in themselves. And so, yeah, so, you know, I guess taking a step back, we get a few different types of clients from a leadership position. As you alluded to, Anne, you know, confidentiality and privacy is important to a great percentage of them. You know, this topic is still a little bit too out there for the overwhelming majority of longstanding companies. But number one, I would say that we get a lot of people that are in a transition, right? So they've either, they're no longer getting joy from the work that they've been doing for 20, 30, sometimes even 40 years. You know, perhaps they're just out of a long relationship or marriage. That's another, you know, pretty typical client. You know, what has been working for them up until this point of their life seems to no longer be working for them. So they really need a bit of a change in paradigm. And then there's a lot of people who have come to recognize that they do need to deal with their trauma, right? So there's this kind of dynamic whereby as time goes on, the amount of energy that's required to suppress the trauma that's trying to come up, you know, the kind of the midlife crisis, so to speak, the amount of energy that's required to keep that stuff down actually becomes greater and greater as people grow older. And so there's a lot of people who they just really feel that there's something welling up inside them, and that they need to do something that's different to manage their mental and emotional state in a way that is going to give them some peace and some resolution in terms of what's going on inside them.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, especially now, if we talk about people who have to, first of all, lead other people, or constantly have to come up with innovation in their company. And I mean, those people come to you. But also at the moment, we kind of experience a very fundamental shift, obviously, that, let's say, old school leadership structures are kind of falling apart. And I think we're just in the middle of reorganizing this. Nobody really knows how new leadership really will look like at the moment. So maybe you can talk a little bit about how this kind of specific challenge for leadership or C-level kind of jobs could actually be affected by a psychedelic treatment or experience. That would be great. I mean, also what you experience, what you've seen with people.
Yeah, and I would come back to you know, often the style of a leader is often a reflection of what's going on in their inner world, right? So if there's a lot of anxiety and fear and lack of ability to control themselves, then that will often be reflected in their leadership style, right? So they will be top down, control, hierarchical, because again, it's all a reflection of consciousness, right? And so if there's that sort of experience in the inner world, then that's going to be reflected in the outer world and in the leadership and management style. So, you know, it's very common for people as they begin to do their own healing work and have breakthroughs in relation to, you know, how they treat themselves, to then, of course, that also become reflected in their management style. And so, you know, I think we, as you say, Anne, we see a radical shift away from top-down fear-based hierarchy to more servant leadership model. And it's great to see. I think, you know, as much as anything, business is always innovating towards that which is more effective, that which is more efficient. You know, there was one of my old mentors told me, you know, controlling what other people are doing, how is that working for you? And I think we can all know and admit that at some point we've tried to control what other people are doing, and it almost never goes well, right? And so so it just shows us that there's such an opportunity in an efficiency to unlock between all of us individually and collectively when we stop trying to control and we engage on another set of principles, which is about how can I help you? I know that you and I want to achieve the same things. Let's make sure that that's true. And then how can I help you? And how can you help me to make sure that we can achieve those things together? Because, you know, it's a hard and lonely path to try to command and control everything around you. If instead you focus on trying to foster and facilitate an environment and ecosystem that everyone can work together in harmony, well, that's a much more interesting and exciting way to collaborate, and probably much easier to get out of bed in the morning to find your inspiration as well.
But I mean, can you give us an example from somebody, of course, no names and stuff, but who came in and you were like, oh God, this guy, he's like the worst. And then after your retreat, he came out and you were like, oh, I want to found a company with this guy. So, I mean, I'm just curious how the transformation is happening.
Yeah. Well, there's two examples that come to mind. You know, I think a lot of the dysfunction and imbalance that we see in the planet is really a result of too much of the masculine, you know, command and control type of energy, mm-hmm. and not enough of the feminine, right? The nurturing and the caring type of energy. And so the two examples that immediately come to mind are, as a result of that, men.
Yeah.
one of our clients, he runs a big commercial real estate empire and has done so very successfully for, you know, better part of 25 years. Mm-hmm. But you know, he was previously at the absolute epicenter of everything in that business. You know, he had two phones and was just, you know, mm-hmm. constantly yeah. connected and kind of tapped into every little detail. And so, you know, the company was a byproduct of that very finely tuned, set of experiences that he developed and a real sensitivity to anything that wasn't done to an absolute perfection. And so, of course, that, you know, that becomes the bottleneck, right? You only right. establish yourself as the bottleneck in establishing that sort of culture and dynamic. And so as he began to release a lot of the fear from within him, he was able to relax that structure and to really, you know, take a step back and do what more CEOs should be doing, which is the big picture stuff rather than, you know, are the I's dotted and the T's crossed within a particular, you know, set of legal documents. So
yeah.
that was really beautiful to see. The other example that is just a very recent one actually is a client who you know, he was working very hard. He was he's chief security officer at a number of different companies, so on a consulting basis. And you know, he was stretching himself pretty thin. He was drinking a little bit too much. He had some challenges with his spine, and so he was, you know, also medicating with painkillers to try to just cope with the pain and, you know, just stay on top of things and keep plowing forward. And so over the course of, you know, a 10-day retreat that we hosted for him in Costa Rica, he was really, you know, he's given up all the booze. He says he used to come into the room with a certain, in his words, you know, El Diablo sort of energy and kind of, you know, very ego and like, yeah, I'm here to fix the day and I'm the guy and, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And he says it's been amazing, you know, with his own shift in energy, he's been able to have just much deeper and much more loving conversations with people that he never would have met, you know, before, you know, the mother and the young child would have never, you know, engaged with him in the cafe because it's just a different energy. And whereas right. now he's having these really yeah. deep and meaningful conversations with the people next to him on a completely different basis and just feels much more connected to himself. And as a result of feeling that connection to himself, he feels more connected to the world. And so, you know, those are the sorts of people that, you know, I think they've succeeded, right? They have big impact, but are they having the right sort of energetic impact is a different question altogether. And so when people in such a short space of, you know, 3 or 4 weeks can begin to have these very meaningful shifts in the way that they treat themselves and as a result, the way that they treat others around them, it's a real point of leverage because, you know, leaders influence so many.
And how is it if these people who were like El Diablo before come back now into the office, into their old system and are no longer that person? And I mean, I guess assume that not everybody wants to leave their jobs. They just, like you say, they have like a certain moment in their life where they feel, okay, if I keep going like this, I'm probably going to get a heart attack or like developing a full-blown addiction. But the interesting thing to me is always in general, when you come back from a psychedelic experience and you absolutely want to prevent to tell everybody, oh, I've seen God or anything. Like, you know, this thing where people are like, you said that earlier. Kind of. So I think an interesting moment is that's why it's so interesting. You guys have also this integrational part. So how do you kind of explain what is happening when people come back into their old ecosystem and what do you guys actually help them to do to kind of reintegrate themselves?
Yeah, and I think it's just to set a slightly broader context, which I think is important to attempt to answer this one because it's a complex one.
Yeah, sure.
You know, there are some leaders that are coming back into a much broader context that is above and beyond their control, right? So if you're going back to a Fortune 100, Fortune 500 company, you're likely to be a leader amongst a very large group of leaders. There's already right. a predominant culture that has often decades, if not many decades of history behind it. And so for those people, I find that, you know, that integration process can be even more challenging than for someone who's, say, the CEO of their own company. Because if you're the CEO of your own company and you've had a massive, you know, elevation in consciousness that you've been able to sustain, then you can begin to shift the culture of your company to reflect that change in your own consciousness in a relatively short space of time. And I suspect that it will become, you know, it's something that will come as very well received by the colleagues that you have around you, because you're going to be more patient, more empathetic, more loving, more caring, all of those sorts of good things. Now, perhaps in contrast, not to say that you can't bring all of those traits back to a Fortune 100 or Fortune 500 company. Of course you can, and of course you should. But what people do find is that integrating that into a much stronger and much more pre-established culture can be actually quite a bit more difficult. And so what people often find is that there's you know, the integration of their insights into the work environment, where it's still perhaps top-down hierarchical, you know, very much driven by a different set of principles than that which they might now prescribe to by virtue of the breakthroughs that they've had, becomes a bit of a spiritual practice, because they need to catch themselves and be patient and empathetic perhaps on a much slower, you know, the transition is going to happen on a much slower basis, and it needs to happen on the basis of individual conversations, individual relationships, and sometimes people are willing to spend the time and the energy into their old organization to begin to facilitate that change. Other times people feel that now there's such a difference in the level of consciousness between their work environment and where they are at, that they actually just don't feel inclined to re-engage in that sort of environment, and that they actually right. need to go and find new something employment. Else. So it's yeah. So it's that one's a very interesting one to manage with leaders. And so it's important that they have, you know, that they have some trusted third party support to help, you know, help them integrate the experience first and foremost into themselves, and to be able to abstract away from that lower level of consciousness that may be, you know, persistent in their work environment, and to help them really work through that in a way that's not overly reactionary and overly, yeah, just, you know, not too fast is a thing that we often say to our clients.
Mm-hmm. And what about teams? I mean, we know they're kind of a family constellation with psychedelics basically happening, or it's a thing that's coming, which makes total sense to me. But as we know, family constellation is also used in a team context or in a work surrounding. So did you have already, let's say, a whole team coming to you and saying, okay, like, let's say the four C-level people, we need to strengthen our bond. We need to come up with a new idea of our 20-year-old company. And now we're venturing into new times. Did that already happen, or I'm just like the total genius to come up with this idea?
Yeah, it, you know, I actually wanted to establish Behold Retreats around that concept initially, bringing together my background in consulting and exactly that, which is, you know, generally speaking, taking a step back, I think generally speaking, a lot of bright entrepreneurs and executives, you know, they're in a company that's got a very bold and exciting mission, but then the ego gets in the way in terms of being able to execute as efficiently as possible as we might towards that vision. And so absolutely, these are very powerful experiences. I know that there is a lot of leadership retreats that are taking place. We are we're planning for one with the company later this year. We haven't held one yet, but we're very excited to host that that first one for an organization, and really to, you know, help them, you know, first and foremost do the personal work, but then also to bring an aspect of the collective into that picture. And I think you're right that it's, you know, it's got incredible potential to unlock the dynamics between the individuals that are no longer serving them, and also to help them set an even bolder vision perhaps than they might today, and they might have today, and come together around that, and to acknowledge the differences in skills and capabilities that could lead towards a more efficient execution on that path. You know, I think often we get stuck or even bogged down by this, oh, well, my role is this and your role is that, and right. this your role is that. Yeah. Which gets in the way of actually making the most of the skills and capabilities that we have within a given leadership team.
So, and let's say you have three people or four people doing this. So, and I assume you would do ayahuasca with them maybe. So, or maybe also psilocybin. So is it that they interact while tripping, or is it only happening after they basically coming back to, like, out of the trip, and then they, oh, I saw you as my sunlight and experience, or like as the person that's absolutely crucial to me and stuff. So how does this actually work in the trip?
So one of the reasons that to set context, one of the reasons that I think it's important that say a leadership team works with third party support is that I've heard some stories actually of people, leaders feeling pressured into doing this work along with the rest of their leadership team, right? Where it's like, oh, well, all 10 of the leadership team are going to go down and we're going to do this retreat for this weekend, and oh, you have to come, right? And so there's like, well, okay, now seven or eight of the leadership team are going, and so now are the last two going to feel like they are pressured into the experience? And so that's not, you know, that's really not the right energy for this type of work, as you can appreciate. So I think it's important that people have their own individual experiences in relation to this work, and to have someone, you know, a third party to, yeah, help people decide for themselves, right? Because, you know, we all have this inner knowing. And so tapping into that, and whether a leadership retreat with the rest of, you know, my colleagues is the right context for me to go and have a first ayahuasca retreat. I think instinctively, a lot of people would say, maybe that's not the right for the first time, maybe the second time, maybe the third time, but it's ultimately up to each of the individuals. And so the way that we would facilitate that would be everyone to have their own individual experiences. And then, you know, as things are coming down, you know, then to bring people back together and to have, you know, more experiences that are more collective after the peak experiences.
Okay. And I mean, you just basically already talking about this, about, let's say, the security aspect, or like the safe experience. So let's say, again, you have like a couple of people coming, and of course you talk to them before, like, for example, are they on any medication? Are they on any, even antidepressants? Do they think they might be suffering from an addiction problem? So, I mean, as you actually kind of, for you, it's important to have like a safe experience for your clients or for your customers. So is, how far can you actually go, and or do you go and ask them about their mental health condition beforehand?
Yeah, we go quite far. So we've, you know, our screening is about 6 pages long, and goes pretty in depth in terms of their physical as well as their psychological state. And, you know, of course, that's necessary and in the highest interests of anyone who is considering doing this work, because, you know, it's important to understand where they're at mentally, emotionally, and energetically, spiritually, because that's going to very much inform the likelihood of them having a very challenging experience. And, you know, especially if we were talking about doing this within the context of a group of colleagues, then, you know, generally speaking, if someone's going to have a very challenging experience, they probably don't want to have that with a whole bunch of the people that they're going to work with, you know, for, yeah, for the years ahead. So, so it's very important. I think the other trends that I should have shared actually is that we see there's a lot of leaders that have become emotionally disconnected from themselves, right? So they've become so accustomed to stress that the nervous system is basically just disconnected from the mind to a great extent. And so, you know, most leaders don't even know that they're emotionally disconnected. I've got, you know, from my past life in consulting, I've got a lot of clients that are so stressed out, and they're so used to being stressed out. They have been for the past 20 years. They just keep loading themselves up with higher and higher workloads that they don't even know that they are emotionally disconnected. And I didn't even know that I was emotionally disconnected, because it's just the norm, you know, that's just the byproduct of a high stress environment.
But I mean, this, exactly this being emotionally disconnected, the interesting thing about last year is that people could not ignore this any longer, that the disconnection, because you were suddenly, you had way less influence, not being on the plane for the whole week, basically flying to crazy places, like 5 places in a week, like especially people on sea levels, like going to America, the next day to China, the next day. I mean, it's a total normal thing, depending on a company. So, and then suddenly it's like, no, you have to stay in your chair and look at the screen maximum. So my question would be, do you feel that, like, say, the request for this reconnection has increased? Like, people are looking into this again, what I want to ask is, do you have more people from a leadership position coming in and asking especially for that?
Yeah, I think purpose is definitely a big one, and reconnecting emotionally. I think more and more leaders are waking up to the fact that they are emotionally disconnected. And as you say, I think COVID has played a significant role there in terms of people no longer having the usual distractions and demands that are all encompassing. And so, you know, it's always an interesting dynamic. You know, the clients that we work with, when they're very excited, they're often very excited about the plant medicine part, because they've read some stuff, they've heard some stuff, you know, maybe they've seen something in The Economist or one of the big publications. Exactly. And they're like, yep, okay, let's do this. And then when we start having a more meaningful conversation, then they're like, oh, this sounds like it's going to take a lot of time. How much time is this going to take? And it's, you know, they just want to go and do right. the plant medicine component and kind of bypass the mental and emotional work. And that's not really what we're about. And so it's always interesting, because it's hard to get these people to prioritize themselves, is the reality of it. You know, they say that they're prioritizing themselves, but really when it comes down to it, it's like, it's really hard to get them to spend time on themselves, with themselves, and for them not to see that as indulgent even often, which is quite funny. Because, you know, these are high performing people who understand that the performance of course comes from within, but actually making that, you know, time investment in themselves, a lot of them find that quite challenging, which is funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, speaking of The Economist, I mean, there is a book called The Psychedelic CEO, kind of portraying a picture of a maybe not so future CEO. I mean, like, of course, we all know these examples of Steve Jobs and other big Silicon Valley names who basically spoke out about plant medicine getting them into, or bringing them the idea that the company really has to have, or the product. So, and in terms of a kind of bringing your brain or presenting new ideas to your world, because your brain has kind of this reset or reboot or like a new neuroplasticity. If you now leave out the whole mental health thing for a while. So do you think this will be like a very normal tool in the next 5 years? Because everybody who has ever done it and who has kind of a business that I talked to had really crucial ideas afterwards, or crucial changes, or got some, let's say, downloads, informations, met some people in their trip that actually had such a big influence, real people or not real people, on their further engagement. So, and I'm always wondering, I mean, is this something that at 5 years we just, oh, I need to prepare a meeting. I'm going to go, just exaggerating now, I'm going to go on an ayahuasca weekend. So that would be like a very hardcore form, but it kind of comes to mind that it just really makes total sense to get new ideas for your company.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think that's right, and I think this will become a more generally accepted tool for creativity and for elevating consciousness. You know, I think one of the things that honestly disappoints me a little bit is how much of the media attention in relation to psychedelics revolves around depression and anxiety and PTSD. Don't get me wrong, I think it's so important that this is such an amazing and powerful tool for treatment of these ailments that you know, that lead to hundreds of millions of people suffering around the world. And that's amazing. But that's such a limited perspective on the potentiality of this tool, as you spoke to. And I think, you know, there's so much excitement in terms of our ability to tap into, to higher wisdom, and to use that for individual and collective benefit, as well as to elevate our consciousness so that we are more caring, loving, empathetic, and courageous on an ongoing basis. So I think, you know, the current mental health paradigm has just set this bar where If you're below the bar, then you need to go see someone because you need treatment. If you're above the bar, then everything's just fine. Get back to work. And that's fundamentally not it. You know, there's no end to the evolution of consciousness. We are the, you know, the highest earthly form of consciousness that we know about on the planet. And what's exciting about that is that we can evolve ourselves to even in higher and higher and higher states of consciousness. And, you know, the mystics have been telling this to us for millennia. We just haven't been listening. And so I think this, you know, there's more and more of the academic community is really buying into what you've probably heard about before, which is the stoned ape theory, which is that theory that our prefrontal cortex has fundamentally co-evolved in collaboration with these plant medicines. It's not that these plant medicines do cool and interesting stuff to our brain. It's that our brain is interesting in large part, or our brain is as interesting as it is in large part because of these powerful, powerful plant medicines, which is a complete revolutionary, you know, is a complete shift in terms of how we think about these medicines.
Absolutely. And I mean, at the same time, like this expression of psychedelic leadership is kind of, there's even a podcast, I think, around this. So it seems also something that becomes not, let's say, straight connected to like a over-the-top Silicon Valley idea, which we know like microdosing got rediscovered in 2012-13. I remember reading the first articles about reintroducing microdosing LSD in Silicon Valley, but now this means something else. It's not only like put your brain, kind of create like a high functioning brain. It also means that are more maybe inclusive, that you're more take into account what's happening with the people whose maybe plants you are using, that let's say indigenous people who actually came up with this whole idea 5,000 years ago. So what does that mean for you, that kind of expression? And do you think it's kind of the leadership of the future in a way?
You know, I think there's actually a great video that on the stoned ape theory, which kind of describe leadership traits as courage and empathy, right? So the empathy of being able to listen to others, all right, to really understand how they're seeing the world, right? Because often the broader team has collectively a much better perspective on what is than any one individual can possibly, right? They speak to more customers, they know the suppliers better, you know, whatever industry, whatever dynamics we're talking about, there's a collective wisdom that is always greater than our own in the context of business. And so leaders who have the empathy, that don't believe that they have all the answers, but believe that collectively there's a lot to be gained through having empathetic conversations with the team, I think will be at an advantage relative to those who think, you know, they have all the answers. Secondly, the courage. So once there's, you know, the collation of ideas brought together, to actually have the strategy and the insight to actually drive the team forward, right? So, you know, going back to our tribal days, to actually climb over the mountain and make sure that, yes, there is, you know, better caves on the other side and a lake and hunting grounds that that I can go back and bring the tribe to, and that there is fertile ground there to bring the broader team. And so I think, you know, fundamentally that's the role of leaders, is to have that courage, to have that empathy. And I think psychedelics, yeah, absolutely can play a fundamental role in helping people develop themselves. And so as a result of that, develop their leadership capabilities.
Okay. I mean, let's say leadership people who want to come to a retreat. What would you say kind of expects them? What is the journey they're going to go on once they engage in it?
Yeah, so, you know, my personal journey and my realization, then also speaking with others, is that as people are doing plant medicine work, there's a bunch of dynamics which lead to not getting the benefits that are possible through this work. And so those dynamics are, number one, skipping the mental and emotional work. Number two, you know, this is an unregulated ecosystem. So that means that anyone can be serving medicine. And so as there's been an explosion in demand, more and more people have obviously moved into this work. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're capable of doing the work at the highest level. This is very complex work. You know, the medicine is complex, humans are complex, mm-hmm. bringing the two together makes for a lot more complexity. And then doing that in a group setting even adds another layer of complexity to it. So making sure that there's really expert guides and facilitators. And so what we do, as I shared before, is 3 weeks of preparation, which includes group as well as one-to-one coaching. We've got an online program which provides people resources for guided self-inquiry. There's meditations in there. There's healings in there. There's exercises to help them really set deep and meaningful intentions in terms of where they want to be in, say, 3 months' time, and also to help them really understand where they are today, right? And also to begin to release some of the shame or some of the guilt in relation to some of the things that are holding them back, right? What often happens is that, I don't spend enough time with my family. And then they feel guilty or they feel shame right. about not feeling mm-hmm. spending enough time with their family. So there's not only what they perceive to be a problem, which is the not spending enough time with the family, but then there's layers of emotions around that. And so as much as possible, we love to give clients big shifts even before the plant medicine retreat experiences, and teaching them the tools for metacognition, teaching them the tools for emotional processing means that they can actually begin to do a lot of the work ahead of the retreat. And so that means that, you know, when we step into a ceremony and we drink the medicine and there's this, you know, big amplification of energy that begins to take place, that we don't contract away from the experience, but we expand into the experience because we have the tools already. And so we're able to work much more effectively and efficiently. And what leader doesn't like to work effectively and efficiently with the medicine? Right. And so right. able to release many more layers of what we are not. And that's, you know, the way that I see this work is that it's just about releasing layers and layers and layers of all those lower level emotions, pride, you know, anger, envy, fear, apathy, grief, shame, guilt, and just releasing as many layers of those lower level emotions that we are not, so that we can begin to elevate our consciousness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what the medicine is trying to do, is to bring us up into those higher states of consciousness and providing us that opportunity to really resolve those dissonant lower level energies that are keeping us away from what we truly are.
And have there been many people after the retreats that founded their own company afterwards? I'm just curious, just out of curiosity. Have there been many who just left their, let's say, corporate jobs and like you did, and created their own space, their own life also?
Yeah, well, it's been interesting. There's definitely been a few that have been very interested in the plant medicine space coming out of the experience, because they're like, you know, because they
have to do it.
We all have we can't help but have some sort of certain expectation, right? Yeah. A lot of our clients have been first timers, or maybe they did some psilocybin when they were, you know, in their college years, when they were 21, 22 in a group, and a very different sort of a context. And so they come out of these experiences going, wow, and thinking about the business opportunity. And so, you know, it's always
for sure.
interesting, because, you know, it's of course not our role to try and slow them down, but, you know, I always encourage them, maybe do a little bit more of your own work. It doesn't have to be with us, of course, but maybe do a little bit more of your own work before you kind of jump in so quickly into this new exciting space.
There's even this one episode in Billions where they are seeing the ayahuasca guy, and then they want to bring him into the company, and somebody else already has him. So I guess that's what's happening in a certain context right now. But you know what? I think that's been fantastic. It's a very compact idea one could get that is might be interested. And then, of course, like, you have, like, I don't know, all over the place you have retreats. but again, always in places where it's legal to do. So, and I mean, on your website, one can see where these retreats are. Of course, they're all beautiful. It was a great conversation. I love that you're kind of so able to focus on this point, because we never really had that specific topic so far. It's pretty often about rather mental health issues. So, but I think this is a very interesting way, I think, that will develop way more in the coming years, I'm pretty sure.
So. Absolutely. And I think it just comes back to the fact that we've normalized what is not very good mental health, right? We've set this bar
exactly.
at completely
yeah.
the wrong totally. Level for ourselves. And so anxiety and stress and all of those sorts of things, you're just going, well, everyone's got that. So, I mean, what's the problem? Like,
yeah.
you're like, well, that's the problem.
Yeah, but it's even almost to the point that if that is going away, that you feel like, okay, what am I going to do now? Sometimes, like, how do I get energized without anxiety? It's a serious question, because I remember in my early days as a journalist, that was my main. Can I meet the right people in 2 hours? Can I write a story in a half an hour? Can I? So the anxiety was the number one motor to go on a plane to like wherever and just get the story done in 3 hours, because. Like in your mind, you're always like, okay, what's my boss going to say? Is the team on board? Is it going to be ready? So, and then like after everything was done, normally you would then think like, well, now I should feel relieved, but you were not relieved because the cycle would still be going on. So, and I think that's a big motor in the Western world, is working out of anxiety. Honestly,
absolutely, absolutely. It's that outer drive and motivation
yeah.
rather than the inner peace. And that's I think that in of itself describes so much of the dysfunction that we see in this world.
Well said. So thank you so much. It was great. Great you were on the show, and I'm sure we hear more from you very soon on this channel. I'm sure we can come up with a couple of new collaborations.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for having me, Anne.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the New Health Club Show. And please follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Or if you would like to sign up for our newsletter, please go to www.thenewhealthclub.de and subscribe to the newsletter. Again, please follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Clubhouse, of course. There's also a New Health Club now. Or even better, sign up to our newsletter on thenewhealthclub.de. I talk to you very soon.